My name's Ann, and I'm really glad to be here and part of the Al-Anon program. I like to start. My life is still affected by alcoholism. I have not lived in a home with a practicing alcoholic since I was 15 years old. But I still have a mother that's in my life that I see periodically, and I saw her last night as I was packing. And even though running shoes are extremely comfortable, I was packing and she was speaking to me, and I'm in my house, and she's going to stay there and watch our children. And I was so frayed and frazzled. I left my whole outfit on the bed and ran out the door. So I'd like to thank all of you for being here, and I'd like to thank my sweetheart for her pants, my running shoes, and the rest of my outfit. So thank you for understanding. And it's actually, then I'm thinking, I'm like, you know, it's actually kind of a cool prop. Given my story, I mean, like I said, I haven't been in the house since I was 15 years old, and that's because I fled out the window. So it is kind of like, you know, a little bit apropos for a little piece of who I am when, you know, things get going and things get tough. So what it was like and what happened and what it's like now, I want to start with, like, you know, what it's been like this last, let's say, week and a half, 2 weeks. I went on a trip and I came back. And it was a wonderful trip. I took a trip, went down to an island, did nothing but read and hang out, did a little bit of work, came back. And I had set up before I left, something came across my email for this performer that was coming to Santa Barbara. And it was a performer that my mother was just followed, stalked, followed, was fully engulfed in, you know, 20-some years ago. And somehow I had the presence of mind to remember this. I emailed her and asked her if she would come up and if I could take her to this for Mother's Day when I returned. She responded that she would come up, and so I got the tickets. I went on my trip. I came back the very next day. She came up to town, and I took her by myself, just me and my mother. We went to this event, and it was an hour long. It was a surprise for her. I told her the surprise when we got to the venue. She was thrilled. She was surprised. She was excited. She was a little bit overwhelming and overwhelmed herself. And we sat there for the hour and watched this. Afterwards, we got signatures on this, you know, new book that was written, and then we came home. When we were sitting there on the sofa with Beth, who's my sweetheart and spouse, and we were sitting on the sofa, the kids had already gone to bed, and the feeling that washed over me is that I was no longer a four-year-old wounded child with my mother. I was not, that wasn't my experience that night. My experience there is I showed up as a 40, almost 49, adult. I showed up as an adult, and I was in that performance and in that experience that night. And it may only be that night. It may never be like that again. I fleed out of the house yesterday. It may never be like that again. But for that night, that was experience. And what followed after that is the years in program, the God knows how much money in therapy, the everything, all the effort that's been put into somehow being able to survive my childhood and have a different experience. That feeling that I got that night of just being an adult rather than a suffering, wounded child, it was all worth it. Every meeting I've ever sat in, every inventory I've ever written. And I thought, isn't that interesting? And I'm sure I was the only one in that room that night at that event thinking, yay, I'm 49, it's my mom, you know, I'm not that four-year-old wounded child, you know, in all the work it took to just do that one event. So to back up a little bit, let me back up a lot. I'll back up a lot. I grew up in alcoholism. My life is hugely affected by alcoholism. When I got here this weekend, I was like, I'm kind of in this space. I'm a little premenopausal. I'm, you know, 49. I could hot flash in the middle of this morning. Anything could happen. But I'm very like, whoop. So I'm asking people that have known me for years, like, man, do I have an Al-Anon story? I can't remember a thing. And thank goodness people know me well enough here and have sponsored me that are in this room that are like, oh, come on, you know, and they're sharing with me some of the, you know, who I am and who I and who I was. And so who I was a child. What I remember back is age of four, and I was in preschool. And it's the first memory I have. And what I remember is being in a room in a preschool. I had this overwhelming feeling I needed to be someplace else. And now I didn't have a huge schedule at that point. And but I got up and I left. And I just walked out. So I don't know how the series of events, how I ended up back up at home or back with my parents. I wasn't necessarily running from anything other than me in my seat. And that has been a common thread. Me in my seat is really difficult for me. And so at the age of four, I started walking out. And the alcoholism that was in my home was loud. It was violent on furniture and doors, and that was mostly from my brother. He's a year older than I am, and I saw him as he was just angry guy. He was so angry. And his anger was on me. It was, you know, it was back when gun cases and stuff like that were in the hallways. They weren't hidden, you know. And my dad, for some reason, had all these guns in a gun case and BB guns and stuff. And I was like target practice for the BB gun running down the hallway. And this is growing up. So I had, you know, I was just in terror. I was in complete fear from this guy. And mom's like doing her drinking. She's going in her room when she gets home from teaching, and we don't see her the rest of the day. My dad's off on business trips. And I somehow was in the place of, you know, I became a martyr. I became a peacekeeper. I just wanted to be quiet and everything okay. I would do anything for that. I would be cleaning the house. I would, if I was too overwhelmed, I'd go out the door. You know, but my whole thing became like, you know what? I got this. I can do this. I can do this. They look like they are just suffering. And the problem was I was a little bit young to take on this role. And now I'm too old to ever take on the role again. So with that, you know, I was a martyr. You know, I showed up. I went to school. I had custodian when I was in an elementary school that, you know, felt like it was, you know, his disease was live and active, and thought, you know, nurturing me would help his issues, and I didn't say anything. I didn't want the house to become any louder, noisier, any more conflicted than it already was, and so I just endured, and I learned to tolerate and endure, by the time I got into junior high, you know, I was one of those kids that wanted a horse, and my mother got me a horse. And so the farrier, when I was in junior high, thought I could start working for him and coming and help him, like, do something with horses on, you know, Sundays while he shod horses, I'd hold the horses. And that turned into... he would be taking me to a hotel, you know, and I was 11 years old, and I couldn't say anything, you know, and it wasn't because my parents weren't interested in what was happening. It was because I didn't have a voice, you know. I didn't know how to say it, and I didn't know what to say, and I didn't want to say it. You know, I just, again, didn't want any more conflict in that home. I had taken on this role that was bigger than anything I should have ever seen. And none of this, by the way, like I said, I haven't lived with alcoholism, you know, in my home since I was 15 years old. And I am in Al-Anon now, you know. I am in Al-Anon now because it turns out I am the problem, you know. And it turns out, you know, it's not my, there's no blame anywhere in my household. Everybody's guilty, you know, but there's no more blame, you know. It's what I did with the information. And what I, how I morphed that, who I became in that, I survived. And, you know, at the end of the day, I'm grateful for whatever course was taken, I survived. And that's who I was. I live by survival strategies. You know, I'm still a bit of a survival strategist. And I will take it and I'll try and figure it out before it's even going to happen. And then I go in, you know. And that's what I did. I just survived. And so... There was a time when it became too much, and I thought that, you know, the things that were happening with men and the horseshoer and the custodian, and then there was another. My dad was doing a lot of business out of the country, and then there was his business partners that were coming in. It was becoming this almost, I thought it like a way of life. You know, it was something that this was my lot in life, is the way I saw it. So, you know, going along, wasn't sure what it was supposed to look like, but I thought that was the best it was going to get. So I left when I was about 15. It was too much. I couldn't hold it together anymore in that household. I couldn't keep the pieces together in that household, and it was obvious. Things were falling apart. My mother was going out, and she was being dragged in by my father because she wanted to go drive, and, you know, things were just getting crazier and crazier. I went out that window, and I didn't look back, you know, and the next time I came to land was, I think I was 18, and I had gotten in a car accident that put me into the hospital, and I needed to go back to my parents' house for a couple of weeks to recover. And as soon as I could, I got back out of there. And then I went directly, you know, within a couple of months, I was in a psych unit for taking an overdose. And while I was in that psych unit, it was the quietest, the coolest, the calmest place I had been in years. It was perfect. And I had a group of friends in there. I had this, some guy I think I was having an affair with. I had daily meds. I had safety within walls and a bunch of crazy people just like me. And I had a schedule of things that I could do, you know, leather shop you could show up for or not show up for, or, you know, and I was just in there. And I remember walking out, my dad came at one point, and I was walking him towards the doors, you know, these doors that went out to the streets. And I was walking him towards the glass doors. The doors opened. He was leaving. I saw the world out there, and I was so freaked out. I was so freaked out. I ran back in that psych unit, and I wanted to stay. And they would only let me stay. I think I was there for a couple months. But when they asked me, you know, I was ready to go, I was to continue to see a psychiatrist. But there was no recovery. There's no healing that was happening, you know, and I didn't know that's what really needed to happen. So, you know, to shoot forward, there came a time when it was suggested to me that I go to Al-Anon. My relationships at that point consisted of, you know, leapfrogging from one relationship to the next. I overlapped. I was afraid to be alone. I was afraid to be vulnerable. I was afraid to be rejected. I was afraid of everything. And I remember sitting down and realizing, you know, I had survived. I was a survivor. I knew how to keep it together. I knew how to do things. When I sat and I had this feeling that, you know what, I really don't know how to survive. I really don't have any tools. I went to this woman. She said, you know, maybe you need Al-Anon. And I don't need Al-Anon. That's not my thing. And I thought Al-Anon was doormats. I thought Al-Anons were passive. I came to find out that Al-Anons are mean. Al-Anons are some of the craziest. I have some Al-Anon stories that, oh man, they far surpass any alcoholic story. It blew me away. But when I walked in my first Al-Anon meeting, I had all the differences. I thought, man, this is not going to be the place for me. And I sat in the back and listened and did not listen, but I was angry, and I'd go outside, and I had this buddy that was going with me, and we were pretty, you know, little, you know, self-righteous little, you know, whatever we were. But we just sit outside smoking, judging, you know. And I thought, this is nuts. But I started hearing little things about, like, silent scorn, sweeping the floor, not saying a word, you know, but putting grooves into the linoleum. Like, oh, that I get. I started hearing things about, you know, being the martyr. I started hearing, like, what that really meant. You know, I didn't have a language or vocabulary for any of this stuff. But I started hearing these things that I identified with, and I just kept going. I'd sit outside, and we'd just be smoking, and we'd go into the meeting. And that's what I did. And there's there became this time that, you know, and I realized I was going to these meetings, and we'd have sponsor would have meetings, and I would listen to this person share about her husband, and she would talk about being in a relationship with this husband, and she'd show up to some of the meetings, and she's like, "Oh, I love this guy. He's my hero. He's fabulous." She'd come to a month later to the next meeting. Oh, da, 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 da. You know, and she'd go to the next meeting. "Oh, he's wonderful. He's my hero. He's fabulous." I thought, you know, there's something about that that I want. Because the second the flag goes up in my relationships, I'm out that door. And I thought, what is that? That relationship. And I was clued into, you have to stay. You have to stay for that to happen. You have to stay and do the work. Staying is not my strength. You know, I have running shoes. Staying is not my strength. And I had to learn to stay, and I had to learn to start talking, start opening, start looking at the steps and thinking, you know, I am powerless. I am so powerless over alcoholism. I am so powerless over people. I don't live, my spouse is non-alcoholic, she's a human. You know, that's my problem. She's human, I'm human. That's usually my problem. I sat and I stayed, and after a couple of years in there, or maybe it was a year in there, I guess, I went to a meeting, and Beth was in the meeting, and I started thinking about Beth. And we were in there, and I watched this person coming into a room, and people were happy to see her. She had friends in there. She was liked. She was likable. I saw something that I'd never looked for in a relationship ever, you know, and that was what was around them and what happened. And there was an interest there that started between the two of us. And we started dating. We had a dating story, you know, that started with asking her out, and we went on a date, and we continued to do this. And she had a sponsor in her life that she was active with, and she would call that sponsor and, you know, and get direction on what to do, and I'd call mine, and it just seemed totally foreign. We waited, and I was in the middle of purchasing a home, and eventually months went by, and I asked her to move in, and I'm thinking, you know, by the time you ask them to move in, you know, what it takes for me to get to the place to ask for somebody to move in is huge. And I asked her to move in, and she went to her sponsor, and she did some writing and did some work, and she came back and said no. I thought, no. No. Who doesn't want to do that? You know, and she came back and she had the information. She didn't want to shack up. You know? She didn't want to shack up. Who doesn't want to shack up? She didn't want to shack up. And her Al-Anon program and my Al-Anon program, we just thought, you know, we're in this void now. Now what do? Well, we just continue to date, you know? And eventually we got married and she moved in, or vice versa. But we did do that. And then along the way came, you know, my life is getting bigger and bigger and bigger and busier and busier and busier. But what's happened is I have gone from, I'm in program, I'm working the steps, I have sponsorship, I'm having fun, my life is getting way bigger than I can handle. And now we're talking about having kids. We go through the what we need to do with that. Pretty soon I'm pregnant with twins, and we have twins on the ground. And my life is so big. Now, I've done all this work in Al-Anon. I've been working the steps, like I say. We're in program. We have strong sponsorship. We're involved. But there's so much more healing that needs to be done. And this life is bigger than I could ever imagine. So I'm trying to catch up to this life. You know, I'm trying to catch up to this big, fat life that somehow has been built. And I'm running. And by the time I caught up with it, I'm like, I'm so out of here. And I'm running away from it. You know, I just passed it right up like a movie because it was too much. And Beth and I, we have 1, 2, 3-year-olds, and we had so much support. It was lovely. We had so much love around us in our home. And it came to a place that we were imploding. You know, Beth has a big fat career. I had a big fat job, and we have these kids. We have a nanny. We have a home, and we're in Los Angeles, and we're imploding. And the next thing I know, I think once again, like that kid, I'm like this, and it's like, I got this. And one day, this is all going to fall into place, but I got this. And what happens, I didn't have this, you know, and our relationship exploded. I was on the floor. I was on the floor in the closet with this information that I didn't know what to do with it. And thank God for the relationships and program. They came over, they got a wheelbarrow, they scooped me up, they put me in it, and they dragged me to a meeting. And I just started on a whole new journey. The good news is that a year earlier, we were in a situation, you know, the economy was crashing, we were building a spec house, and I remember sitting on the floor of that spec house as, you know, the economy's going down, and I'm trying to get this house finished, and Beth called and said some reference to God, and I snapped, and the words that came out of my mouth were, there couldn't be a God if it's going to be this hard. And, oh, there's my sponsor. There couldn't be a God if it's going to be this hard. And I had got a little dose of reality. After all, you know, after some work and years in the program, I had a God that was a little bit of a Christmas tree God. And that was one that if I do this and this and this and this and this, and I show up to this and this and this and this, it's going to look like that. And it wasn't looking like that. And even if it was looking like that, it sure wasn't feeling like that. And I needed to go step back and redo my first three steps. I needed to get back into, you know what? What is my spirituality? What is my practice going to look like? And I got to do a do-over again. And it seems about every 5 years I seem to come to a place of a do-over. And I did a do-over. So by the time that our relationship was exploding, I was God-readied. You know, I had done the do-over, and my God was intact. And I was spiritually intact in that way, even though everything had seemed like it was just falling apart. Well, it turned out that my relationship exploding was yet a sign of work that I really needed to go do. And thank goodness for, you know, my sponsor just wonderfully walked in. I would wake up at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning just wrenched in pain. And what she would do is point me right back to my side of the street. This work that I needed to do had nothing to do with working on my relationship. Had nothing to do with working on a relationship. It was about working on me. And everything inside me is like, we should. And it's like, oh, no, 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 no. This is you. You should. You find your 3%, you find your 60%, you find your 80%. Her percentage is her percentage. Whatever your percentage is, that's what you work on. And that's all. That's it. What's in front of you? And I'd wake up 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, and I'd just write my part. And I found out that those men that, you know, I thought I could just brush aside had affected my life. You know, I thought that if I just, that's not a big deal. My mother, growing up in alcoholism, didn't think that was a big deal. The things that I brushed off as not a big deal, what I did is I allowed them to be a big deal. Now they're not a big deal that runs my life now, but I got to experience them being a big deal in that moment. I got to go back to those places and heal those wounds and have a different experience of what it can be like now. And so the big blow up that, you know, happened between Beth and I, you know, I'm like, you know, my hair's on fire, up against the wall, ass falling off to get me to do anything often. So that's what needed to happen, and that's where I was. You know, the wind was taken out from out of me. There's no place else I could go, so I got to do the work. So I spent a period of time doing the work. Beth went off and did her thing. She moved out of the house. I stayed with the kids. We did what we could, and we just did our parts. I did the work. I did what it was going to be, and then it became a time that Beth and I were talking about seeing if we could work something out. Now, the great news is, it was at a time that I found that I just wanted to keep doing the work with me. And what happened was she started interviewing to be at another job, and she proceeded with those interviews, and they asked our family, to move to Santa Barbara. I wasn't at the point that I was even sure that we were going to be in a relationship any longer. The great news is I was able to say, like, you know what? We're going to have to sell the house whether we're together or not. So let's put the house up for sale. Let's do the footwork and see where it's going to go. God's going to be in charge of whether it's two moving vans or one moving van that pulls up, and we shall see. I was wiped out enough that I was finally at the point of, let's see. And that became a great answer for me. I didn't know that was even possible. And the let's see became, you know, when she came and asked me if we would move to Santa Barbara and if we were going to do this, you know, we stood in our kitchen, and I don't think either one of us knew what was going to happen next. But we literally stood in our kitchen. We just said a little prayer, and we jumped across a linoleum tile and just said, let's just leap forward and see what happens. And we just took the next step. The kids right at that point were, I think they were 4 years old. So they had, we took them when we moved them to Santa Barbara is what happened. And I'll say now is the best thing we could have done. You think, who doesn't want to move to Santa Barbara, right? I had developed relationships here in Los Angeles. You know, I'd developed a safety net, and I was really afraid to move from that. And but, you know, while we were still in Los Angeles, there was this one, when I was starting to go to Al-Anon, there was a couple things that happened. And one of them was, you know, my mom had driven up to my home in Burbank, and she'd driven up, and we had some interaction, and she said something. I had a different reaction to it, and this is 6 months into Al-Anon, and then she drove away. And up until 6 months, I kept like, why am I in Al-Anon? Why am I in Al-Anon? What is in Al-Anon? She drove away, and I had a different reaction with my mother. That's why I'm in Al-Anon. That's why I'm in Al-Anon. And my reaction before was I was a crazy one. We had a Thanksgiving dinner over at my house years earlier, and my mother and my brother got into it. Now, they're getting into it. They're on my front lawn going at it. And I'm out there screaming at them to get that off my front lawn and get out of there. The next day, do you know nobody remembered my brother and my mother fighting on the front lawn? What they remember is the crazy Al-Anon out there screaming at them. And that's the story. That's my story. You know, I always come out crazy, you know. So I just yell louder. So I'm not the crazy one. Don't you understand? You know, so here we are. My mom drives off and I get to have a different experience. Well, so, you know, a few years like that, you know, I have a couple years of Al-Anon under my belt. We're at my, you know, parents' house, and my brother is cooking steaks. And he goes out, and my father has two bottles out there, and one of them's a water bottle for the barbecue, and the other one's a bottle of bleach that he uses to put in the dog and, you know, animals, whatever. So my brother comes up to me, he's like, hey, would you mind eating one of the steaks that has bleach on it? I used the wrong bottle. Yeah, sure, I'll do that. That was my response. So I eat the steak with bleach on it. It's amazing, I'm still such a carnivore. So we get in the car, evening just goes on. We get in the car, and Beth looks at me, she's like, why did you eat that steak? Why did I eat that steak? I've been eating that sky steak all my life. You know, I thought, that's the Al-Anon I am. That's the Al-Anon I am. And it's like, I don't want to be that anymore. I don't want to be that person. And, you know, getting through a little bit of food poisoning for the next 48 hours, I was like, I'm going to stop eating those steaks. I'm going to stop showing up and being that victim anymore. And so the best I can. So, you know, here we are. And that's a couple years into Al-Anon. So these ahas are still, you know, frequently coming. And so when we get up to, you know, this last this last time, and Beth and I are building our relationship back up by again not working on our relationship. We actually don't do well in therapy together. It's not pretty. We do better just doing our work and just turning the rest over and seeing if it's going to work out. And so far, for almost, I think, 12 years now, we're doing great. And our kids are 8 years old now. We have, as we were going through these paces, and our children were, getting older, and they're starting to do school. We just had this interaction with them this last week, and we're changing schools for them. And what we got to see was, I either clean the house if I need to kind of get things in order in my head, and if I'm overwhelmed, I go for a run or I go for a walk. And we gave them some information this week that they're going to be changing schools into fourth grade. And we sought some professional help with that to see how to deliver this message, to see what to say. And what I think Beth and I both heard loud and clear is what we hear in Al-Anon. Share what's going on and then let them have their feelings about it. And to sit there with eight-year-olds, we deliver the information, and they're pretty mellow kids. Like, they're not big reactors. My daughter had a reaction to it. She was not happy. And to sit there in silence and just let her have that experience was unbelievable. It was unreal. And she's crying, I'm crying, my son's just like, really? And it was like, it broke my heart. So my daughter, kind of steps aside, and she goes over the sofa, and she's really upset, and Beth gives her a minute. Beth goes over there, and she's just doing this, and she runs to her room. I look out the back door, and I see my daughter along the back fence. But they don't have a back door in their room. She went out the window. So how does she learn this? So I tell Beth, I'm like, I'll be right back. So I go outside, and I see her, and she's kind of across the yard. I'm like, I don't want to interrupt what you're doing, but I'm just saying, you can go out the window anytime you like. You just can't leave the property. Just stay on the property. And she wasn't headed off the property, but she needed to take a walk. And so she's out doing her thing, and she's crying, and she's, just letting it rip. And she eventually invited me over, and I just walked with her, and I told her that, we just walked, and after a few minutes, I said, you want to go inside, and I'll answer any questions you have. And I just let her lead it. And what an experience. What an experience watching this eight-year-old have her experience and just letting it be. And we went and did that. And while we were in the back room, and Nora and I were together, Beth is with Quinn, our son, I hear the vacuum going. And I think, is that the vacuum? So Nora opens the door. She's like, yeah, it's a vacuum. So later, I go out there and I ask Beth, I'm like, what's the vacuuming? How did that happen? She said, well, it happened after he washed the dishes, wiped down the tables, and then he started vacuuming. I thought, these are our kids. Beth's looking at me like, oh, great. But they have their tools. They intuitively knew what to do to soothe themselves. And isn't that the greatest experience in the world? That if I can just, like, one human at a time, whether it's Beth, whether it's, anybody else, any loved ones, any stranger, is one human at a time, let them have their experience. I love to jump in there because I don't like seeing people in pain. I want to rob you of your pain. I want to rob it. I will take it. I will hold it. I can handle it. That's who I am. I can handle it. And what I find is I fall apart when I try and handle too much. I told you I had this, when I grew up, I was the, like, I got this. You and I figured out that I was that person was like 3 months ago. When I go to the kids' new school, they're having, we've been applying for and going through this process, and We go in, and they invited, Beth was out of town, they invited the kids and the parents for like this testing day, and the kids were going to go in and do some activities, and they're going to take the parents into the library and do some activities. And so I go in with the parents, of course, and I'm sitting there, and the headmaster, the principal, whoever he is, has a board. And the board shows these strands of spaghetti. There's 20 strands of spaghetti. There's like 2 feet of tape, some string, and a marshmallow. It's on this board. So he's telling us that we are going to, our activity as adults is we are going to build whoever, we're going to have a competition in groups of like 3 or 4, and whoever can build the highest thing with a marshmallow on top wins, right? I am already so stressed because our not because of that. I walked in stressed because, like, this school is, this school is amazing. But, you know, the whole time I'm like, you know, God willing, if this is where we're supposed to be, you know. But inside, I'm like, oh. So I walk in and I'm like, you know, now we have this project. Well, I'm a builder by trade. So I see this board, I'm like, oh, I got this. Right? So I'm in it. I'm already like thinking structure, you know. So this whole thing. So we go to these tables, we break off, and I'm in my head, I got this, you know. And we start building this thing, and the people are little other parents there, you know. So what do you do? What do you do? You know, most people in Santa Barbara are retired. We actually have to work to live there. And so, you know, it's like, oh, I'm a general contractor. I'm a builder. Like, we have a builder at our table. No. So we build this thing. Do you know the guy's counting down? We have 18 minutes to build this thing. He's going, 10, 9, 8. Ours is the only one that goes, crashes. You know, the good news is that, you know, the instructor said, you know, you guys get first place for having the most fun because I heard more laughter out of your table than any other table. And that's what I know to do today. But what happened inside, I went through like a 3-week shame spiral. And I'm like, what? So I'm talking to people about it. I'm like thinking, redirecting my career. I should not be a builder. I cannot take 20 strands of spaghetti and make a structure out of it. I should not be building your house, right? So I'm just going, you know, but I am so bothered by this, you know. And so what I had to find out is I had to go to a place of like, you know, what's this really about, you know? And what it for me once again was, you know, this is the third time I can remember since I have in my lifetime, and I'm sure there's many others, but 3 very profound times, you know, I still had that, I got this, and I don't have this, you know, and it was shared with me in a very simple pasta-type structure way that, once again, I don't. And I try and hold it together. I tried to hold my family of origin together. I couldn't do it. I tried, and the shame that came along with that I carried. I tried to hold my family that we built together in together by, you know, with anger and fear and intensity and overworking and exhaustion. And it exploded, you know. And it just showed me that still even yet, you know, I don't have it, even the most simplest forms. And, you know, I don't have it enough to, you know, grab my shoes. But what I've learned is like, you know what, that's as good as I got. I don't always know. I rarely know, actually. These days, more and more, I really don't know. And I'm really glad to say that most times. And so when we go through this, when I have this experience with my mother, you know, it's taken me 22 years to be able to make amends to my mother. And the reason for that wasn't because I didn't want to go to her with my part. My part is really apparent to her. She knows my part, you know. As a matter of fact, when I finally made the amends, she just looked at me and said, yes, you're quite a shit. And but when it took me that long to do it, I would pray about it, I would write about it, I'd go through the steps again, I'd get to that point. She was the one on the list for that year, whatever it was. It took me years and years and years until Beth and I exploded and I really found out about me and who I wanted to be, you know, authentically. Without all that stuff, who am I? You know, I got to find it out in the course of that doing that work. And so my biggest fear wasn't of, you know, going and doing that. My biggest fear is that there would be any kind of intimacy that would develop out of me making amends. You know, I'm willing to turn all this stuff over, everything over, except for that part. I was so afraid of that and what that would do. And I tell you, what happened was my, I think, you know, Beth and I were talking about, I was like, oh, I think it happened yesterday. You know, I made this amends, you know, a couple of years ago. And so, you know, we go through the course of this Mother's Day exercises last couple of weeks. And, you know, what happened was my worst fear at that time, which I don't remember anymore, my mother's coming at me, you know. And after I made that amends, and I said, you know, I'd go to meetings and I'd share about that amends. And I said, you know what, we're clean. We are a clean slate. There's no more blame. And I'd say, but, you know, I'm not going to take a road trip with this woman. I, you know, it's we're not there. I don't see that in my future. So that's my next, you know. So what happened these last couple of days, my mother's come up, she's watching our children while we're here, and she asked me for a road trip. Oh, my God. So I went, nobody was home except my mother and I, and she asked me the question, she's like, you know, I'm going to need you to go on this road trip with me. I need to go to the Midwest. And I'm like, two big reasons. So I go into the back room, and I'm like, no. And I come back in the kitchen, and I just listened. I just listened. And she desperately wants to connect. And her way of connecting is so hard for me sometimes. But she desperately wants to connect. And I can stay in this program. I can do all the work possible. And I'm going to have to, just to avoid a road trip with my mother. But no, but, or show up, whatever I'm supposed to be doing. But just the fact that I'm talking about it here, it's like really scary. So, you know, and that is why I ended up, you know, running out the door, leaving my clothes on the bed and getting down to Los Angeles. You know, I was reacting to the alcoholic, you know, and I was in full reaction to, are you flipping kidding me? Is this what's next for me? I have this really quiet, great life. You know, is this what's next? A road trip with my mother. What do I know? You know? So I think, you know, more than anything, when I came in these rooms, I, you know, would hear love and support the alcoholic. I thought, what? Love and support the alcoholic. What does that even mean? And I'm finding out what that means. You know, I sit there, I listen, you know, whether it's the alcoholic mother, whether it's, you know, my father, whether it's my spouse, whether it's my children. If I can listen and leave alone, that is the best thing going in my house. You know, it's keeping my mouth shut. Nobody really wants to hear it. I found that out. I came in and I didn't have a voice when I came into Al-Anon. You know, I wasn't saying what I need. I didn't know what I need. I didn't know who I was. When I found out who I was and what I needed, I started screaming because I wanted you to hear me loud and clear. And people don't listen to screaming is what I found out. You know, and I had to learn to finally, to quietly just go get what I need. Find what I need. Beth doesn't have everything that I need. I have friends. You know, I have friends. I have sponsorship. I do have parents. I have a brother that I have a relationship with. And these aren't people that, again, that I plan on taking any road trips with. You know, I will hang out with friends of Beth anytime. And I have two wonderful children. I have a badass life. Dana came up to our house a couple weeks ago and she sent me this text. And she said, you know what, she sent me a text and said, you have a really big, amazing, badass life. I do. And I'm really happy to be right in the middle of it. I'm right in the middle of it today, you know, and doing it and just excited to see what's come up next. I no longer have to be in the land of suffering. I don't have to suffer anymore. I don't have to tolerate anymore. You know, I can accept it. I can reject it. But I don't have to do those other things. So anyway, thank you so much for allowing me to be here. Thank you, the committee, and thank you, Mary. You know, Mary's amazing. And the committee, I know how much work this is, and you're doing a fantastic job. Thank you all.
We hope you've enjoyed this recording. To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.